Latimer, I'm not sure about this tea there. That house looks rather unloved.
Don't worry, Mom. We're not visiting it in this time. We'll take the time bubble back into the past, long before the tragedy befell the family who lived there.
Tragedy?
Nothing to be concerned about, Mom. I'll just get the time machine from the... Oh.
What's wrong?
Someone has stolen it.
But who could have done that?
There are several likely suspects, Mom. Adam Christopher, Lauren Bucus, Francis Harding, and, of course, Gareth Larcenus Powell.
That's not what the L stands for. Besides, they are all lovely people who would never dream of something so underhanded.
Theft of time machines is one of the last modules at Villainy School, so it must be someone very...
Villainy School? Oh, Latimer, you do come up with the silliest things sometimes. What are we going to do? My guest will be here very soon, and there isn't time to arrange an alternative tea there.
I shall do my best to make it as pleasant as possible, Mum. May I suggest you wait outside and cover your ears?
Latimer, put that chicken and that knife down.
Very well, Mum. I'm sure I'll be able to find an alternative sacrifice.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't suffered any ill effects from discovering just how brilliant the second Captain America film is. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea there for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I must apologise for the state of the tea there, but Latimer has done his best in the circumstances, and has at least found one room with an intact ceiling that isn't leaking. I can only ask you to imagine how beautiful this house was in the early 1800s, and ask that you enjoy that instead of seeing peeling wallpaper, dubious stains on rotting rugs, and all manner of beetles in places they shouldn't be. At least this room has a fireplace, and a few functional pieces of furniture. Do take care not to lean against any of the walls, as they are a tad fragile in places. Let's make the most of each other's company, and the doilies Latimer has brought in to cheer the room up. It could be worse. Probably.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mum, but your guest has arrived. A Miss Emma Vicelli.
Splendid! Let's see her calling card. Emma J. Vicelli, purveyor of fine lines and swooshy hair.
I once knew a fellow called Swooshy Hair.
Really, Latimer?
Terrible rogue.
Show her in, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Emma Vicelli is an illustrator, whose work includes the New York Times best-selling Vampire Academy graphic novel series and the Alex Rider series for Walker Books. Alongside comics, she's also worked on the A&E television series Bates Motel, providing the sketchbook found by Norman Bates.
Ms. Emma Vicelli, ma'am.
Hello, Emma. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm a little bit damp right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. The weather's awful, isn't it?
It is. I thought you have the whole of time and space at your disposal. I guess I'd maybe imagined a less intimidating setting.
Oh, I am so embarrassed. Please do sit down. It is one of the few functional chairs here. You see, we picked this house, but we were originally going to be going to it 200 years ago when it was beautiful.
Ah, that makes sense. You've made it very nice, though. You know, you really, the doilies make such a difference.
Well, you know, you can't go wrong with a doily, can you? It makes so many things better. Plague.
They do.
You know, dysentery.
Pack vomited on the carpet. Put a doily on it.
So, yeah, the house was beautiful, but I'm a bit embarrassed to say that our time machine has been stolen.
Ooh.
And Latimer hasn't been able to recover it yet, and we haven't had time to find another lair, and we didn't think it would be so bad a couple of hundred years in the future. But
I'm so sorry about your time machine. That must be gutting.
It is, actually. It is. It's a bit annoying. You know, if someone keys your car, you're like,
yeah,
damn. But when they steal your time machine, it feels personal.
What do you do? Yeah, how do you respond? Yeah,
what do you do? Yeah, you end up in a really rickety old house. You know, Latimer, the shame on his face this morning. He's tried so hard. But this room doesn't have a leak.
No.
And, you know, we've lit a fire in it. It's cheerier than the rest of the house. But anyway, would you like a cup of tea?
I would love a cup of tea.
How do you take your tea?
Oh, what tea do you have?
Oh, well, there's Earl Grey, and there's Assam, and there's PG Tips, so whichever you like.
I'll go for, let's start with just some Yorkshire tea.
Oh, Yorkshire tea. Yeah. Yes, we have Yorkshire tea. I'll make a pot there. Yeah, I like Yorkshire tea.
And I take it without milk, unfortunately, due to years ago not being able to have milk, and then I got so used to having tea without milk that I've never been able to go back, which I kind of miss it.
There's lemon if you want lemon, but I'm not sure about lemon and tea.
Not Yorkshire tea.
No.
Weird.
No, it just wouldn't work, would it? So
builders drinking Yorkshire tea
with lemon in it. And a little cocktail umbrella.
Yeah, and a doily.
Of course a doily. So would you like a bowl of summer pudding?
Oh. Ooh, okay. What is summer pudding exactly?
Summer pudding is where you have loads and loads of lovely berries and fruits, and they're cooked in a sponge. And it's really, you can either make it quite heavy and suety or quite light. And Latimer's made it quite light. And when we were going to come here 200 years ago, it was going to be summer. And so he baked accordingly. And now it's a rather dreary, wet spring.
I did say it feels a bit of a disconnect, but
yes.
Very nice. Maybe if I cover it with hot custard.
Yes, we have custard, and Latimer has heated it over the fire. So would you like custard and cream, or just custard?
Oh, just the custard.
See, I knew that we'd get along famously. I'm a custard person.
What is the name, you see? We have the same name, ergo we like custard. That's apparently the rule.
Yes, it is actually a causational relationship. It's not correlational at all. So don't mind the chickens. We're having to keep them in this room because we're a bit worried they might fall through rotten floorboards and things. You're not allergic to chickens, are you?
No, I'm not. Are they going to sing for us?
They may do later on if the mood takes them.
Aww.
And it often does. So I think you'll be fine. So the first question I wanted to ask you was about the swooshy hair on your calling card. Is that the hair you draw for people, or is that your hair?
Oh, I wish it was my hair. No, alas, my own hair is not that swooshy. I want it to be more swooshy. No, I just like drawing swooshy hair. I don't know, this thing, I can't remember who it was who said the swooshy hair thing once, and it just made me laugh and stuck with me, that, oh, she draws swooshy hair. And I was like, yeah. I just love drawing hair. It's really therapeutic. I just sit for ages and just draw hair.
Really?
Yeah. I used to hate drawing hair. When I first started drawing, it was just a hindrance to getting onto with anything. You know, like, oh, waste time on tendrils. What is this stuff? And then, a point came in my life where it became very zen. I was like, oh, hair is suddenly very peaceful and, I don't know. I quite like hair. It's quite dramatic as well.
Maybe it's a kind of equivalent of gardening or something. I've noticed so many of my friends, as they get older, they've suddenly taken to gardening.
Yeah, maybe. It's like this is Zen gardening, where you rake the sand.
Yeah.
But drawing hair, maybe.
Maybe. It hasn't happened to me yet. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little bit... Maybe I'm a late bloomer.
Maybe. One day you'll be sitting with a pencil in hand and suddenly you'll just be like, oh, I want to draw hair.
or in the garden gardening.
Or doing a garden. That's probably more useful.
They both seem equally unlikely. So in the invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Well, I am a very classy person at heart, and also quite easy to please. What I've brought with me is actually a very new object. It's not even anything I have any great sentimental attachment to. But just recently, myself and my husband visited Stowe Village, which is one of the early Anglo-Saxon villages. And in the gift shop of Stowe were these rings. They were little £3 children's rings, but they were Celtic rings, and they were also mood rings.
Mood rings!
Mood rings! And I just had this moment of going, oh, a mood but also a Celtic moon. And to me, it was the cool. I think the woman working in the shop thought I was insane because I decided I had to get some for friends as well. So I was sat on the floor pulling all these mood rings out to check all the sizes. And but it's amazing. I'm staring at it right now. And you know how back in the 80s or 90s, you'd have mood rings that would basically go, you are cold right now,
yes.
You are soft right now. And they would just go one colour and stay that colour. Well, these ones change colour all the time and they're really cool.
Oh, well, yeah, they were so, so massive when I was a teenager.
Hmm.
I always wanted one and I never had one.
Oh, well, next time I go to Stowe, Emma, I will buy you a Celtic mood ring.
Oh, thank you. See, this is my life has been building up to this moment. It deprived me of substandard mood rings in the past so that one day I could have a Celtic one.
Yes, they genuinely bring joy. They actually, and then, of course, you're happy, so then your mood ring just says happy.
Yay, that's so cool. Now, I might have imagined this because I am prone to doing such things, but am I right in thinking that you do amateur dramatics, including musicals?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
What's the biggest role you've ever had?
Well, it's a bit weird with me in theatre because actually I used to be professional a long time ago. So I always refer to it as my previous life. So going back sort of 10 years... I used to do a lot more stuff, and so I think probably the biggest role in terms of sort of audience and just the venue would have been a pantomime of Aladdin, where I played Princess Jasmine, and Beth from Hollyoaks was Aladdin, and I got to kiss Beth from Hollyoaks, which was pretty cool. She was lovely. But then, yeah, then I had this massive gap because comics took over my life, and then just last year I decided, do you know what, I really, you know, you get so isolated, when you, as you'll probably know, when you're working on your own, you just feel so isolated from everything, except for conventions, which are completely overwhelming, so I thought, I think I need to interact with some people, like real people, and it seemed a really good thing to try and do, so got into the local, like into kind of Cambridge theatre stuff, went for an audition for South Pacific, which... I hadn't done the show before, and I thought, oh, well, you know, I'll try a chorus role in South Pacific, because, you know, I've had a 10-year break, and this will be a really nice way to build back up, you know, get my confidence back, because it's terrifying going back to something that you did a long time ago.
Yeah.
And when I was younger, people used to say, oh, how can you possibly perform? And I'd be like, well, how can you not? It's great. And yet, going back after 10 years, suddenly it was the scariest thing in the world. I hadn't expected it to be so terrifying. But so I went to this audition thinking, yeah, you know, I'm going to... a chorus role, and I ended up getting Nelly, which is the lead role of South Pacific, which is a really big role as well, and so that was, yeah, not the gentle easing that I'd expected it to be.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was so amazing. It was such, the group is so lovely anyway, and I mean, it's amateur theatre, it's local theatre, but amateur theatre means something very different now, apparently, to what it did 10 years ago. Because it was phenomenal. It was the most professional feeling show I've ever done. It was crazy. We had a 30-piece orchestra, and it was just phenomenal, absolutely brilliant. But that the first performance, sitting in the wings, listening to the overture, sitting there in costume in this massive theatre, and I just had this moment of going, "What the fuck am I doing?" Why am I not drawing comics right now? What the hell? Like, it was absolutely terrifying. I just had this complete rush of... But then I guess that's what I always used to love, doing theatre, and I guess I'd just forgotten about that adrenaline that pumps through. But once I got out on stage and then just sort of, yeah, got lost in it and had such a good time. So so much so that I dragged my husband along to the next audition and we're now both doing Godspell.
Oh, wow, fantastic. I miss it. We used to do it really quite a lot before I had my little bean.
Oh.
But I never did musicals, never did the singing side of it. No, we wouldn't sing in public.
What kind of stuff did you do?
We were in Pinner Players in North London. And it was very much the kind of the Alan Ayckbourn belt around London.
Right.
I think one of the biggest parts was in a play called Dead Funny. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's quite a niche one. It's actually a fantastically written comedy about these four people who are obsessed with old-fashioned comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. So I had to have simulated, obviously, sex on stage for that role, which was quite interesting. And then do a somersault over this sofa with my knickers around my ankles, my second pair of knickers, I hasten to add.
That's a good thing on your resume.
Yeah, yeah.
But sex on stage and do somersaults.
And I look back at it now and I think, how the actual fuck did I do that? Because I don't understand.
At the time when you're doing it, you know, you're just so lost, it's fine. And then it's only afterwards when you look back with a bit of distance and you think, I had sex on stage.
Yeah, it's really odd. But the best one, on the Thursday, I think it was a Thursday night, they used to have all of the local old dears used to come for like a special rate. And so I did the bit and did the somersault over the sofa and was standing there at the front with the knickers around the ankles, and this old dear at the front goes, "Oh, look, her knickers are down by her ankles."
Congratulations, madam, you're following the plot. That's a great line to have from the audience. I think if we're going for like moments of weird on stage, I think my probably won't seem as funny to tell, but it was hilarious at the time because of the tension of what had built up. But I was doing a performance of Twelfth Night in this amazing stately home, and it was like the setting was just beautiful, very much like this place probably was before it became a decrepit, damp building that we're in right now. It was just a beautiful house, and I was playing viola. And so, obviously, I don't know how much you know Twelfth Night, but it's Shakespeare, it's serious. I mean, it's got some comedy, but it's, you know, dramatic. And we got to the big reveal where I was based, because I'd been dressed as a man for the whole thing. We got to the big reveal, my hair was up in a bun, and I was supposed to basically, I can't remember what the line was now, it was so long ago, but I'm basically meant to take my hair out, like, take my bun out, and then go, "Oh, it's me, I'm your sister." And it's a very dramatic moment. And basically, I reached up, and I started my line, and I'm pulling at this hairband that just everything, my hair is just completely trapped in this hairband, and I'm just like, I can't, and I'm trying to make my line as long as possible so that I can kind of still have the dramatic hair down at the end of this line, and I'm going as slow as I can, my hair's just stuck in this thing, and I can see the other cast members are looking at me like, oh God, but you know when everyone knows something happened. But no one can, it's not like anyone else can go, "Here, madam, let me take your hair down." No one else was supposed to know that my hair was tied up. And, I got so stressed, and there was this point where I just pulled it, and I broke the band, and it twanged out into the audience and hit someone in the face.
Interactive theatre.
Yeah, there you go.
That's brilliant, Steve.
So, yeah, that was like, it doesn't seem a big thing, but at the time, oh, God, it was so hard to get back on track.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And that whole thing of props, I always used to get so stressed around props and would I be able, like, I had to smoke for, I think I was, yeah, it was in Abigail's party, and I had to smoke at one point in Abigail's party. I was not the main character, I was the other woman. Yeah, that was just, I used to get so stressed around this bloody scene where I'd have to look, because I'm not a smoker, so I was thinking everyone is going to look at me and go, "Well, she's not a smoker," and I didn't want, anyway, silly things.
Oh, I think you go back to it though, once Bean's old enough, it's so much fun.
It is so much fun, and we live in a completely different part, we live in Somerset now, and I do really miss it, but I think, I don't know, I've become such a shrivelled, fearful thing since then.
Well,
I don't know.
And that's part of why I did it, to be honest, because I think we do, you know, writers and creators, we lose all confidence. And it was actually my husband said, you know, you've really changed a lot, you just don't have the confidence you used to have. And so it was like kind of a, I don't know, it was a bit of a sort of ritual by fire. I was like, right, going to do this and terrify myself. But no, I hope you do, because it is well worth doing again.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So, wow, I did not expect to revisit that part of my past and ask you that question. That's very cool. So, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was the drawing side of things, because it's something I'm endlessly amazed by, people who can draw. It's like this amazing black art. I don't understand how you do it. Where do you start when you need to draw a new character?
I was going to say, I envy people who can draw too. Constant fascination. Do you mean like in the actual act of literally putting a picture on the paper or concepting it or?
Well, I mean, the very fact that you distinguish between the two makes my ignorance evident. I was thinking, you know, when you have a story that you need to start creating the visual the visual kind of representation of the character. Mm-mm. So I guess that would be a concept stage.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess for me, because even even if I'm doing comics drawing someone else's story, for me, I got into comics because I like telling stories. So I'm a storyteller. I even struggle to call myself an artist because I'm not really, like, I don't do fine art or anything like that, but I see comics as storytelling. So I suppose if I'm any time, there's never been a time where I've drawn a character purely thinking, right, they have brown hair, they wear green clothes, you know, that sort of thing. It will always be, who are they? What do they like? What are their emotions like? What turns them on? What turns them off? And what kind of clothes would they... So when I'm drawing, I won't be thinking necessarily in a visual, you know, I'm drawing this thing here, because I tend to think more of the character themselves and be like, oh, well, I think they'd probably wear this belt with stars on it because they like something about themselves that looks a bit flamboyant, and but they're quite subtle about it. And yeah, so I guess the main thing is coming to it in a story point of view rather than just thinking visually drawing this thing. I mean, there's going to be times where you are. Obviously, you need to make a design mesh visually as well. So obviously you'll think, oh, well, if I'm going to put this shape down here, I'll put it here because it balances. But in terms of starting drawing a character, if it's a particular character, I mean, obviously if I'm just sitting sketching and doodling, then it doesn't matter who or what I'm drawing, and it will just be a case of just therapeutically sketching whatever comes out. So there's no image in my head at all then, which is quite nice, actually. It's just going... that's the sound effect of drawing. You don't have to be the chef. But, yeah, so if it's a particular character, I might be getting my inspiration from... If it's a series where I'm drawing someone else's franchise or whatever, it will come from either I've been reading the comics up to that point, so I already know what the characters are going to look like, or I will have a description in a prose of the character, so I have to extract from that how I think the character looks. But, yeah, and then if it's in my own character, obviously, it's something that I've probably... By the time I get to the point of drawing them, I probably know them inside out because I've been writing them for so long that... By the time I come to draw them, it should be pretty natural just to be like, oh, well, obviously they look like that because that's who I've built in my head.
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, actually. If you had the chance to do a graphic novelisation of any book or any film you like, which would it be?
Oh, man, that's always a really difficult question because on the one hand, there are so many stories that I would love to draw in comic form, but on the other hand, life gets ever shorter and I've got so many original stories I want to do as well. To the point where I've had to turn down a couple of adaptations recently that are things that probably, you know, there was this little voice in me going, that'd be so cool, but on the other hand I'm having to be strict with myself and be like, you can't, if you draw all the existing stories that you want to draw, you're never going to have time to do your own. So it gets really hard. But I mean, a lot of the ones I would like to do have probably been done now. We're in that age of adaptation. But I always used to want to draw Wuthering Heights, which I know that's been done now. Portrait of Dorian Gray, which I know has been done. There would have been a lot of swooshy hair in Portrait of Dorian Gray. I just have to draw this beautiful man. Oh, so hard. What else? There was something the other day I was thinking. I know when I was younger, I would have wanted to do the Vampire Chronicles. I would have just wanted to draw the stat until I died.
Yeah, well, he is very pretty.
Yeah, he is. But yeah, at the moment, there's not really anything I'm yearning for. You never know what might come along. But I think at the moment, I'm going through a real... I've spent a few years doing adaptations, and I really kind of want to... I'm still doing adaptations right now, obviously, but alongside that, I want to be doing my own stuff as well.
Is that the Alex Rider?
Yeah, so that one's obviously adaptation from the Anthony Horowitz books, which is, oh, it's a lot of fun, actually. It's a really, really cool book, and Anthony Johnston's done the script adaptation for it. I actually literally just got to see the first few pages, because Kate Brown, my friend Kate's doing the colours. We've worked together before on My Little Pony, which was quite different to Alex Rider.
Just a bit.
We said back then that we spent a few months farting rainbows with... was how he worked on My Little Pony. But Alex Rider's really very, very cool and quite dark in places, which I like in any story. And yeah, she sent through the first few pages of colours, so I just sat there going, oh my God, it's so exciting. So that's obviously adaptation, but then alongside that I'm doing Breaks, which is not adaptation. So.
Yes, tell me more about Breaks.
Because I love every project I've done, I've been very lucky in that a lot of the projects I've done, I really love doing them. So I always enjoy them, even if it's someone else's story. But I think I'd forgotten, because I started in comics by doing independent, like truly independent, folding, stapling, you know, taking my own little mini comics along with Sweat Drop to a convention, and we'd sit at a table and sell them. So really sort of independent comicking. And I think you always want to keep hold of that feeling. Like, I don't know if you can still remember that first time you saw your work in print. You know, you want to hold on to that. You don't ever want to get blasé about being, oh, yeah, I'm published. You know, you want it to be exciting. But I think because I had a few years of working with larger publishers, and it was always still great, but I lost that sense of ownership, because I would basically work up to inks, and then they'd get sent off, and someone else would colour them, and someone else would letter them, and then about a year later I would see a book appear that I had drawn, you know, that long ago. With breaks, it's the first time in ages where I've basically been doing all the paper. So I literally sit down, I sketch, I ink, I tone, I colour, I put the letters on, and it's my, you know, it's my baby. I mean, it's not entirely my baby, because I co-write it with my friend Malin Ryden. So we co-wrote the prose version together. We wrote it as a novel. And we were going to do something with it as a novel, and then the more we talked about it, I was like, you know what, I'd really love to do this as a comic. It's just that time is, obviously, it would be very slow as a comic. Mm. It takes so long to do. But eventually we thought, no, let's just go for it. Even if we just do one page a week, that's, you know, it's something. But yeah, so visually it's completely mine, and I've been so creatively happy working at, like, I'd forgotten that excitement of just, we're waiting for the prologue to be printed right now. It's at the printers, so it's going to be like the first, it's a 28 page mini comic, which basically launches the series for people who haven't seen it online, or is a collectible thing for people who have seen it online and want to just own the beginning in print form. And that feeling in me of waiting for it to arrive and being like, oh, I made this whole thing. Yeah, it's really exciting.
That sounds very cool. So where can people find it online?
So online it's just breakscomic.com, which is quite easy. So yeah, www.breakscomic.com. and in terms of what it is, it's one of those stories, because everything else I've done, there's always something, like, you can say Alex Rider is about this teenage spy, and Vampire Academy is about, like, political situations between vampire societies and kick-ass stuff, or Dragonair is about people who live in a world where spirit signs govern their being, and there's always been genre, I suppose. Whereas breaks, when people say describe breaks, I'm like, oh, because it's the first time I've done something that is not genre at all. It's real people. It's pretty gritty. It's quite darker places. It deals with real issues. It's, I love it. I actually like it. So, again, it's very different to everything else. I mean, everything I ever work on is always it's always a character piece. It doesn't matter what genre it is. It's always a character. But breaks can't even hide behind any kind of element of genre. It's just, nope, these are real kids growing up and dealing with stuff that people have to deal with, which makes it kind of difficult to market to someone in a way, but the tagline we've been using is that it's a love story but a bit broken. It's like focuses around two male teens who one of them's from a very, very broken family and is sort of under social care. The other one's father's in jail. They're not fully broken yet, but they're not fully formed either, and in time they sort of learn that you can't judge the world in black and white, and that everything has grey areas, even who you fall in love with. And yeah, it's really cool. It's you can tell I'm excited about it because I talk too much about it.
No, not too much. No, I love passion. It's such an important thing, and so much of the world is designed to drive that out of us.
You're right, yeah.
So no, I am very, very happy to have people passionate about things. That's very cool. So I like to ask on the Twitters just before I have tea with friends, and one of my friends online asked a question which I thought sounded interesting, and he said, given the success of your Shakespeare manga, would you consider doing something like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern or Faust or something like that? Does that come under I want to do my original stories more now?
It might be possibly. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead is such a cool play. But do you know what? I don't think I could ever do better than the film. Have you seen the film of that?
I haven't seen the film, no.
And Gary Oldman, it's so good. And I don't think any adaptation is going to beat that, to be honest. So I wouldn't need to adapt that one. I would just sit and watch the film again. Faust, yeah. If life was eternal and I had extra arms or something, there are so many things I'd love to do. And it just, one of the most terrifying things, I think, for any creator is the idea that you're going to run out of time.
Yes.
You know, I mean, with everything, with Ian Banks recently, you know, that I think a lot of people found themselves going, whoa, that can happen. People can die, but they've still got so many books to write. And Sorry, that's really morbid, while we're sitting in this horrible, morbid setting.
It's the house. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. I'm very much in a phase of my life where I am so intensely aware of my mortality. And this thought of, you know, there are 9 books in my head. Am I going to have time?
Right. It's
before I get hit by a bus.
Oh, don't. I know. It's terrifying. That's in prose. If I'm drawing those books, it takes me 3 pages to draw someone walking into a room. You know, that's like a week's work.
Blimey.
You know, so in comic form, not that it doesn't take a long time to write prose as well, obviously, but when you're drawing something, just the sheer physical act of it is so much slower again. I mean, we wrote a 70,000 word novel for breaks in a year. It's going to take about 4 years to draw it, I think.
Wow.
And you start doing that horrible thing where you're counting and you're thinking, how many years is that going to take? How many books do I have left?
Yeah.
Which one am I going to prioritise? Oh, it's scary.
That is scary. You know, I was going to ask you, if you had a magic hat, what would you want it to do? Perhaps that's the answer.
Yes, without doubt. Give me more time or more arms or clone myself. Or something.
Or all of them.
Yeah, all of them. Or be Brandon Sanderson and be able to write 1 million books a year.
So, you mentioned the chickens, and they've been so good, not getting in the way. So, I'm going to ask a question and see if they sing for you. So, if you could choose a theme tune for your life, what would it be?
Okay, this is such a horrible question. It's so, so hard to choose one because our moods shift constantly. But I think the one that I'm leaning towards right now is from the Hercules soundtrack. I told you I was classy. It's the song Go the Distance from Hercules, because I think that it sums up, maybe not the whole like adoring crowds bit, but the element of wanting to find somewhere you belong and wanting to, you know, cause we do kind of live these odd, solitary, but determined existences of, I'm going to do this and it's all going to be worth it. You know, it's going to be worth locking myself in a room and learning to draw for years and years, because I'm going to find a community out there of people who are just like me and I'm going to belong there. And maybe the Cheers theme tune would have also worked.
Oh, you'll make me cry.
Oh. I think all of us have those moments where we walk into a convention bar and people wave and smile and you just feel like, oh.
It is like Cheers, isn't it?
It is.
That was the thing that was so revelatory about conventions for me, that I didn't think I would ever find people like me once I left my role-playing game society at university. And I thought, well, that's it. I'm now cast into the wilderness where I will be the only weird, geeky person out there. And then to go to conventions, it's like, oh, my God, there's hundreds of us.
No, it's incredible. I know. I was the same. I had a very solid role-play group for years, and I'm still friends with a lot of them, but we don't have the time we had as teenagers, obviously. No. Yeah, and you do. You feel like you've been ejected out of your safe geek circle into this big, bad world, and then you realise, oh, it's full of geeks.
Yes, it's true. Okay, little chickens, go the distance. Oh, there they go.
Oh, go the distance. Oh, look, that one's dressed up as Hercules. Oh, chicken sandals.
I thought it was just to cope with the cold house that they knew.
They just knew the dog. They can read minds as well. They are special chickens.
Isabel, you know, I didn't think that until I had Adam Christopher over for tea a couple of weeks ago, and he said something similar, so maybe you're right.
He's very insightful. He can tell if a chicken's reading minds, I think.
Yes, I think he can. Though I am I shouldn't say, I'm a little bit worried about our Adam and whether he may go on to be evil in the future. Well,
so I've heard through the grapevine.
Yeah, so you must be nice to him the next time you see him.
Mm.
Buy him a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or something and you know, remind him that he's loved so he doesn't go on to a life of villainy.
We'll keep him safe.
Yes. In fact, maybe we should do that for everybody. Wouldn't the world be a better place?
Yeah, it would, actually.
If everyone just bought someone a nice cup of tea and told them they're loved every now and again.
You know what we have to do? We have to go to the next convention armed with all the doilies, and we just put doilies on everyone's heads.
And on tables.
And on tables.
In the bar.
Be evil in the presence of a doily.
Yeah, you can't. It's one of those fundamental laws of the universe.
Yeah.
You can't be evil or impolite or vulgar in the presence of a doily. I think you're onto something here. And to buy people cups of tea is a random act of kindness.
Yes, I think that's a good mission.
Well, I think on that note, I will check that yes, we're getting to the end of the Yorkshire tea, I'm afraid. And, yeah, I don't think the weather is going to get any better. I'm looking out the window and it's really quite grim out there.
Yeah.
If I understand you need to get back home, if you make it through the house and go to the end of the path over there, the car's waiting for you.
Oh, okay.
We can give you an umbrella. And perhaps, you know, if you can come and take tea again, perhaps we'll have the time machine. We can go somewhere really exotic and exciting instead of a ramshackle, derelict house in the middle of nowhere in Norfolk. I'm so sorry.
Or we could come back to this house, but when it was at the height of its splendour.
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah. Excellent. Well, do take care.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really fun.
It's been an absolute delight, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you at the next convention and being absurdly drunk with you. I think we'll have plenty of time.
Definitely. We'll do amateur theatre right there in the bar.
Oh, no, don't. All right, then, my lovely. You take care now.
You too. And
I will see you soon. Bye-bye.
This way, Mum.
There she goes, down the stairs. I'll wave to her from the upstairs gallery, I think. Oh, that's nice. She's waving back. There she goes across the hallway now and... Oh! What's happened to the lights? I can't see a thing.
I'll light a candle, Mum.
That's better. I... Latimer, what are you doing with all that salt?
Don't worry, Mum. I'm just making sure we're not taken by mistake.
What do you mean? Who's being taken? Taken where?
Ah... Well, Mum, in order to pacify the spirit haunting this property, it was necessary to make a sacrifice. And as you wouldn't let me offer the chickens, I was left with no alternative but to...
You can't sacrifice Emma Vicelli! She's not finished breaks yet!
I am sorry, Mum. Had I known you needed her alive, I would, of course, have found a suitable alternative.
Oh, no, it's throwing things! It's awfully noisy.
I'm afraid it's a rather theatrical spirit.
Well, Emma isn't very impressed. I've never seen a mood ring go that shade before. She's muttering something, but I can't make it out.
If I'm not mistaken, Mum, she's casting a spell.
Oh, yes. It's making all the mist in the room gather in one place. It looks like a man is appearing.
She's made the ghost corporeal. A curious tactic. Now it will be able to interact with her.
She looks very cross. Oh my. She's taking one of the ornamental knives off the wall. Perhaps she's going to do something violent. The ghost thinks the same by the look of it.
He's going to have to run a lot faster than that.
I must say, this ghost hunting business is doing wonders for her hair. It looks so swooshy. And now she's caught up with him. She's... Oh! That's horrible!
Well, you don't see that every day.
I feel almost sorry for the poor thing, even though it was trying to kill her. Oh, she looks rather guilty too. At least she's all right. And this house feels better already.
All's well that ends well, Mum.
Well, whilst Latimer sweeps up the salt, this is probably a good time to tell you about our Patreon page. If you've listened to this show, or any of the previous episodes, and enjoyed them, now you can join the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Members of the Order enjoy special privileges and secrets in return for offering a tiny bit of financial support. Tea lairs and time machines are horribly expensive to maintain, after all. If you would like to find out more, go to patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. Several people are already members of the Order, and I'd like to raise my teacup to Paul Cornell, Tom Leahy, Missa Buckley, Jane Hanmer, Chris Cornish, Lisa McCurrack, and Phil Shipley for their support. Well, the salt is all swept up, and it is still rather cold here, so we'll be on our way. I'd like to thank you for joining me and the magnificent Emma Vicelli today. Now, Latimer... Let's see about getting our time machine back.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.